Hi, it's Jim Burns, Joe Dawson from Highlander, and you are listening to The Blood of Kings.
I can't follow
that. You can do this in one take. All right, ready?
Hi, this is Peter Wingfield. I play Mythos on Highlander, and you're listening to The Blood of Kings.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 131 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On the show, we cover everything from the Highlander universe, including the movies, the TV series, guest interviews, novels, audiobooks, comics, special events, and, let me reiterate, we are talking guest interviews and special events for Blood of Kings 131, our special interview with Peter Wingfield and Jim Burns. Together! This is awesome. The Mythos and Joe Show. I'm Kevin, your Bloody Kings Highlander podcast host here. I'm really excited for you guys. Back in March, we had a wonderful event, and we'll go into a little bit more later, but the Peter Wingfield Fan Club had held a special friendship con with special guests Peter Wingfield, David Abramowitz, and James Burns. First of all, before we do that, we want to get in some contact information here. We want to, first of all, thank all the fans supporting our show. And if you'd like to get in touch with us online through social media, here is how. You can always find Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network is also on that Podbean app. Make sure you check that out. Fandom Podcast Network is on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also find Blood of Kings on Twitter and Instagram. And also one of our favorite places is on Facebook. Please check out our Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group. We've got a lot of wonderful Highlander fans there sharing all of our wonderful moments of Highlander. And I'm also putting updates on the podcast there. And also we've got a lot of great pictures, including an album that has a lot of the pictures from this event itself. So make sure you go check that out. Also, if you would like to, by the way, if you're a fan of gaming, we have our sister page, the Blood of Kings Highlander CCG Collectible Card Game and Gaming Discussion group page. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. My name is Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at @Spartan_Phoenix. My co-host Lee, he is on Twitter and Instagram at @TheWayOfTheWay with underscores in between each of those words there. There's two ways you can support us here on the Fandom Podcast Network. You can do that through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review there. Please search Fandom Podcast Network, and please leave us a review for Blood of Kings there. Please leave us a review there because then new fans can find us easier. Of course, we love 5-star reviews, but we love feedback in general. The other way that you can support us is through our TeePublic store. Help support the Fandom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings, and get your own Blood of Kings t-shirts and other apparel. Please visit our Blood of Kings store on TeePublic, search Fandom Podcast Network or Blood of Kings, and purchase any of our great logos and put them on all kinds of cool apparel there. All right. We want to remind people coming up next month, very soon, is the Seacouver 2020 tour hosted by Andy Sloan. I went on this wonderful tour last year in 2019, and Andy guided me to all the wonderful locations in Vancouver, of course, that doubled for Seacouver during the 1990s Highlander television series. And it is a wonderful way to see this beautiful city where Andy will take you to all these great locations. He sets up special guests and stuff. If you can't make it this year, make sure you check it out next year. You can contact Andy Sloan here on Blood of Kings, or you can contact him on Facebook directly. We also like to let people know about sword experiences coming up soon in July. July 11th is the Fanboy Expo in Knoxville, Tennessee, the convention experience there. I think it's held on the Friday. Adrian Paul will also be reuniting with Connor McLeod. Christopher Lambert, his co-star on, which is now 20 years later, the Highlander Endgame. So it'll be a nice, cool little reunion there. They will be signing autographs and getting pictures. You can also get pictures with both of them there as well. July 25th and 26th in Ireland, there's an Ireland retreat for sword experience. And also in Connecticut, August 15th, there's also a convention experience there as well. And some other great possible 2020 experiences are going to be in England, France, Germany, Italy, Scotland, Lakeland, New York, Las Vegas, San Francisco, and St. Louis and Minneapolis. If you are a fan of the sword experience or you want to learn more about the sword experience, there's two great fan Facebook pages you can visit. Priscilla Manriguez's Sword Experience Facebook group, Sword Experience Participants with experience spelled with an X. There's also the other awesome Facebook group called SXP, the Ultimate Sword Experience fan group that's run by Riley, Shan, Selena, Lonnie, and Gail. So make sure you check those out. So anyway, welcome to Blood of Kings 131. This is the Peter Mythos Wingfield Convention special interview here, and I have an awesome interview with Peter Wingfield and Jim Burns together coming up very shortly. This was the event called 25 Years of the ROG, Really Old Guy, put on by the PWFC, that stands for Peter Wingfield Fan Club Convention, that was held last March, March 6th through the 8th in Los Angeles. It was run by Renee Everett, who is the admin for the Peter Wingfield Fan Club. It was held at the LAX Marriott in Los Angeles, California. We had some events happening. And now, if you want a more detailed event, make sure you check out the last episode of Blood of Kings, the interview that I had with David Abramowitz and Peter Wingfield. I went over the itinerary there, and there were some wonderful panels there. We also had some a great auction. Jim Burns did a wonderful concert for us on Saturday night. We had some meet and greets, some photographs and autographs, and some, of course, wonderful panels. For more detail, check out that last episode. I just want to say thank you to Renee, as she goes by, for doing this awesome event. I also want to thank Sean Dempsey. He was also the MC. I want to thank all the wonderful volunteers. And of course, I want to thank David Abramowitz, Peter Wingfield, and Jim Burns. They did a great job making this a wonderful experience for the fans. Before we get to the interview, though, I wanted to let you guys know we have a promo here letting you know what else is happening on the Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, a weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom. All right, welcome back to Blood of Kings 131. Coming up, Well, right now, I have a special interview with Peter Wingfield and Jim Burns. Now, I'll be honest with you. I wanted an interview with both Peter and Jim. Wasn't sure if I was going to get them together or if I was going to get them separately. We decided to do the interview together at the end of the convention on Sunday, and it was wonderful. We just wrapped up the closing ceremonies, and everyone was having a wonderful time, and both of these wonderful gentlemen sat down and got to interview both of them together. I just want to say it was great to have Jim there as well, because he did a wonderful concert for us on Saturday night. Now, I am lucky enough to have seen Jim in concert. Andy Sloan, who hosts, of course, the Seacouver tour, we went in when I was with them last year on the event. We went and saw Jim Burns play live. And what's wonderful is that Jim Burns, in between his songs and his set, he has these wonderful stories of all these people that he's worked with, people that have inspired him, people he's recorded with. And he has met and played and recorded with a lot of famous musicians. And this Saturday night of this event was just like that. He was doing these wonderful songs and telling all of us about these great events and personal things that were happening to him. He was also getting very personal about his personal life. And it was really awesome. And having both Jim Burns and Peter Wingfield together reminds me of that season 6 episode Indiscretions, where it was the last episode of Highlander television series to ever be filmed. It was just them two. Adrian was not in the episode, and it was the Mythos and Joe show. And so I'd like to introduce to you my interview with Peter Wingfield and Jim Burns, the Mythos and Joe show. Enjoy. Hello, Blood of Kings. This is your host, Kevin, and I'm here at a very special event here at in Los Angeles. We are here at the Mythos Con, the Peter Wingfield fan club, 25 years of Mythos, really old guy, and I have some special guests with us here. We just finished up the convention, and I have the man himself, the oldest immortal, Mythos, Peter Wingfield. How are you?
I love that idea that it's the Mythos Khan, because that kind of defines him, right? Yeah. I'm really, really well. It's been a fantastic weekend. Really enjoyed it.
That's great. And we also have, let's just say, the ultimate pair of Highlander. You know, who cares about Amanda and Duncan? It's really the Joe and Mythos show. And we have Joe, Mr. Jim Burns. How are you?
The bartender to Highlander. Right? Everybody needs a good bartender. Somebody you can talk to when you're in trouble.
I'll drink to that.
So yeah. Anyway, it is great to be here, and I'm so grateful to Ree, who put this thing together to involve me. I heard whispers of this, and then when I was asked to come, right on the money.
Yeah, let's give it to Ree. She's done a wonderful job with your fan club for so many years. And I was wondering if you could just say something about that.
She's extraordinary, and I mean, Ree, I think she only signed up for 1 year when she first said, "Okay, I'll take it on," but just for 1 year, and then someone else will. She's been so good and just such an inspiration to everybody that she's still here.
That's great.
And 25 year anniversary of the first appearance of Mythos the character to the day, March the 6th. Here we are.
You had a hand in that, so that's good.
I did have a little hand in that because it was the only day I could get off.
I wanted to ask you guys about you guys when you were younger, before you found out about Highlander. I just wanted to get some of your inspirations. I want to start with you, Jim. You talked a little bit about this in one of your panels, some of your musical inspirations. I was wondering if you could mention that briefly again.
Well, sure. I mean, I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, which is a musical hotbed. And as a kid growing up, we had, Chuck Berry lived 6 blocks from me, okay, when I was a kid.
Amazing.
And but also, like Miles Davis is from St. Louis area. And so many going back, the great trumpeter, Clark Terry. And, I mean, just knowing that Jimmy Blanton, who wrote Night Train, is from St. Louis. And when I was a teenager, the first time I saw Albert King was playing at a birthday party.
King, blues player?
Albert King was living in, he was working as a bulldozer, a heavy equipment operator, construction, would play on weekends. until, you know, and this was back, you know, this when I was still in high school. But yeah, it was a birthday party put on by the Five Aces Social Club.
Wow.
At the United Auto Workers Union Hall at Goodfellow and Natural Bridge, North St. Louis. And then in 66, he signed that contract with Stax Records, put out Born Under a Bad Sign, and became world famous. But we knew him as, you know, there was Fontella Bass. I can go on and on about Little Milton Campbell. I mean, the people who lived in St. Louis.
Right.
There's a great gospel film, Say Amen, Somebody. And Willie Mae Ford Smith, one of the mavens, you know, of gospel music. So that stuff was... It was, you know, every day when I would go to school, take the bus to school, you'd go by James DeShea's Santa Fonica Lounge and all these clubs that you would go by. And, oh, there's Albert King is playing there, and Little Mill's playing there, and Little Jimmy Reed, and on. Sadie's Personality Bar at the corner of Union and Wabada.
Wow.
Yeah. And we were crazy enough to go to one. I had a friend that I went to high school with, Rocky, who's passed away now, but he was really a fearless cat, and we would go to East. I met Muddy Waters when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
A place called Slick's Lakeside Club in Eagle Park, Illinois.
Wow.
And which is a suburb of East St. Louis, and one of these joints where, like, he had a show him your razor and puke twice, and they're like, yeah.
one of the things I want to give you credit for, Jim, is when Andy took me on the tour of Seacouver last year there in Vancouver and got to see you play live, and seeing you this weekend when you were performing for us, is not only do you get a wonderful concert, but you get a wonderful history lesson, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, see, I love that. I love to be able to give, you know, people some context, you know. It's real life, and this came out of a real life, you know. It's the stuff that... I minored in history in university, so I like to, you know, I love history, and I love, you know, the fact, just giving credit where credit is due. There's so much music, so many songs that have been, like, reworked by young white pop artists, and I want people to know where this music came.
That's great. Peter, who were some of your early influences, whether they were actors or musicians that inspired you creatively?
So I got into acting in high school. My drama teacher was a really extraordinary man. He actually,
what was his name?
John Gould. He actually passed last week. So I he's very much in my thoughts at the moment. And I mean, he's a guy who changed my life. Got me into acting, and through that, I went to medical school, but always was doing lots of plays, and then it gradually became clear that was where my heart lay. I mean, I was in London in med school, and they had a thing in London, I don't know if they still do, where as students you could just line up, see shows in the West End for £5.
Wow.
I remember seeing Albert Finney in Orphans.
Wow.
That was
the
just,
Albert Finney.
Oh, and you know, Tony Scher playing Richard III at the Royal Shakespeare Company. Just performances that were so transcendent, and I would sit in the theater at the end, everyone is filing out, and I'm just sitting in my chair, my heart just full and wanting to be part of that. And then, you know, movies, I think one of the pivotal movies is the, you know, Kevin Costner was, for whatever reason, there was kind of a trigger for me in Field of Dreams.
Mm.
That movie is, there's just something so beautiful and perfect about it, and about belief in magic and dreams and the possibility of what you could do in life. But also at the heart of it, it's about a guy throwing a baseball to his son in the
playing
backyard.
Yeah. A game of catch with your dad. Just kill
it. It gets you in the feels, it does.
To add to what he, I mean, because you're talking about music thing, but I also had a teacher, a guy that changed my life, Joe Schulte, at St. Louis U High. The day before I started high school, I broke my arm playing touch football. And so I couldn't go out for, not that I would have made any of these teams, so I went out for the school play. And Joe saw something in me and brought us along. And we started, doing these, go to these speech meets, these dual acting things, and won these awards from the National Catholic Theater Conference. And we would go, in the summers, we would go to New York City to see these plays. And once again, we went, this was the summer of 64, and saw Alec Guinness playing Dylan Thomas. It was his, the play is called Dylan, and it's about his last trip to New York and drinking himself to death.
Oh, wow.
And there's this scene where he takes 18 shot glasses and builds a pyramid. I want to be the drunkest man in the world.
Wow.
And I turned to Joe, my teacher, and, I said, this is it, man. This is it. Also that summer, we saw Richard Burton of Closing Night as Richard Burton's Hamlet, directed by Gielgud, right?
Oh, my God, two legends.
Yeah. And also that we Barefoot in the Park with Robert Redford and Jane Fonda. We saw, we saw every play, Funny Girl with Barbara Streisand, just, the theater, the New York theater, and Off-Broadway, and just absolutely everything. But my teacher, Joe, who passed a couple years ago, and this guy was the head of the drama and was very creative and into the, and he taught calculus. I mean, this is a guy whose brain was working on, it was firing on all cylinders.
Wow.
Anyway, but that feeling of sitting in the theater and just being filled up with, I've got to do this. And, there's just something that's so, fulfilling. And so, and I owe this all to Joe Schulte.
Wow. Before I ask you guys a couple of Highlander questions, I want to ask you about other stuff that you've worked on. And Jim, I want to ask you first real quick. One of my favorite shows, and my dad and I actually bonded on this show. There was two shows that we bonded on. It was Miami Vice and Wise Guy.
Wise Guy, yeah.
And I want to ask you how that role came to you, and just talk a little bit about the process of, and your experience working on it.
February of 1972, I lost both my legs in a road accident. Okay, and still wanting to be an actor, and I kept trying. I had somebody in Vancouver that was sort of an agent, and I would go to auditions, and nothing ever came up. I had gone on a 86. There was a huge this expo in Vancouver, and I worked like crazy. And so after that, end of that, I took a vacation. I hadn't taken a vacation in a long time. My wife and I went to Mexico. When we got back, and there was a message on my answering machine about this audition for this role. And I thought, oh, great, I ran down there and got in there, and I knew nothing about it. Looked at the script, and it was about a cop in a wheelchair, right? And so I went in, having not read it, having not prepared one darn thing, and kind of blew it off with these guys. And the producer was there, Les Sheldon, and later that day he phoned me to come back. He said, they want to see you in LA, so put it on tape. We did that, and then on the 15th anniversary of my accident, I signed a contract with CBS.
Wow.
To get along, And then meeting, Kenny and Jonathan Banks, who, now Jonathan's on, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Mm-hmm. And he's just doing a world. And I just got off the phone with him, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's in Palm Springs. I was hoping to see him. But anyway, so working with really serious guys who I had dug in the movies. And we had the guest stars that were coming in. I mean, it's where Kevin Spacey got his start.
And you worked with Ray Sharkey.
Yeah, Ray, he was great. That first bunch of episodes was so fantastic. And it's just all of a sudden, it changed my life in such a big way. And it's in a way, it's the reason I got the role on Highlander.
Yeah.
It was because I was in Vancouver. They needed somebody. They were, they were going to shoot in 3 days. And I had, people knew me from TV, the producers knew me. And so I went and had drinks with Bill Panzer, and we got along all right. A man that likes to drink. and here we are all these years later. And then the night I met this guy, Wise Guy has a playing in it. We were in Paris. He was coming in for, I guess it was finale, the first
yeah,
finale.
Yeah, because the first episode I did.
Right, it was before, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I have, anyway, we went out to go, immediately we had this hey, we're going to get along, you know, one of those kind of feelings that you have about people. And we went to an Italian restaurant on the Rue du Bac, I believe it was.
This guy's got a mind like a clam.
but these guys, and there was an Italian restaurant, and there was, you know, a guy who talked like this, was in French, you know. But anyway, they knew, because Wise Guy was big in France. Mm. It was called Un flic dans la mafia, a cop in the mafia, right? And it was, I remember he brought out the good grappa from the back.
I remember that, yeah.
At the end of it, because this guy knew me from TV. No, just a funny little offshoot of that. A couple of times I'd be out with Adrian at a restaurant, and the people from the kitchen would be looking, you know, like, and, you know, Adrian. And they would come out and they'd go, Uncle Mike!
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Peter, what about you? What other projects, either prior or after Highlander, whether it was theater, a guest spot on a television series, movie, what else do you look fondly back on?
There were so many jobs, so many moments that were significant for me. I think there are a couple that are different. One was doing Sin Eater, which was a movie I did in Utah. And the thing that I discovered something about acting in that made me realize how terrible I'd been in everything else I'd ever done. there was a moment in one of the scenes where I did not know what was going to happen next. And that, you know, artists generally talk about that trying to lose yourself in a role. I mean, yeah. You spend all your time preparing and learning the lines and knowing what you're going to do. But the goal is to then forget all that. And I had this one moment where it happened. And you then kind of go, oh, right. So that's what it's about.
Yeah.
And you then it changes the way you think about what you do, because you're trying to find that again. You're trying to find that moment of
when you're not acting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's there.
That's one of the things that acting taught me was you mustn't fake it.
Right.
And I carry that with me every day into what I now do, which is very different. But I don't fake it. I don't fake it ever. Because people can tell when you're faking it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it wasn't a fantastic film. It certainly wasn't a big critical or box office hit or anything. But for me, that was a special moment. And then I did a series, mini series called River World.
I remember
where,
that.
Again, the final product is not good. I wish it was good, because there were some wonderful actors in it, some tremendous performances. But, you know, there's
producers
a lot of slip
get in the way.
Between yeah. cut and flick, as Burton once said. You know, playing a character that was, I mean, there was just such a darkness about that character. But because I was playing it over a long period of time, you have that opportunity to really live that character and that worldview, and again, it was that experience of deciding to fully commit to it and not knowing where that would lead, but knowing that if when you start viewing the world through a different lens, if you learn things that are true, then when you start playing that character, they are still true. And that changes you as a human. That expands your understanding of other people's experience, because you have really gone very deep into what would the world be like if I thought this way rather than the way I usually think. So, you know, moments like that for me, that's what acting is about at its best.
Gotcha.
Acting generally is about being wallpaper, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You're the furniture.
Putting on a funny walk and a weird accent and saying lines that no human would ever say. Telling stories that have absolutely no value whatsoever.
Yeah.
But they put a lot of people's kids through college. So, you know, there's
I wanted to ask you guys specifically about your characters on the Highlander TV show. And I got one specific for you, Jim. But Peter, I wanted to ask you, the character of Darius, at least in one of the novels, had a moment where he experienced what was called a light quickening. And because he was a warlord himself in the novels, and I think it's referenced in the TV series as well, and it changed him. When you look at the Four Horsemen, Revelation 6-8, the relationship that your character had with Cassandra seemed, it kind of hit home with them. And also there was a quote that your character says at the end of 6-8, I think, where Cassandra, one of my many regrets. But we never really got the moment, I think, that would have been really cool. And I wanted to ask you, what changed with Mythos' character, would you say? Like, what was his opening to where, you know, he wasn't, you know, wanting to have anything to do with the Four Horsemen again. He wanted to live life again. What do you think it might have been?
I think Mythos's way of surviving was about disappearance, was about blending in, about not drawing attention to himself. The Four Horsemen, they were not in that territory. They were very much very much in the... we're coming, and it's going to be bad. I think for him, there's also... He always struck me as an incredibly emotional character that worked very hard to not allow those emotions to come to the surface. So he would surf on the top of the waves, but there was a very deep ocean below, and that as long as he could keep it light, everything was good. But every now and again, cracks would appear. I mean, the Methuselah's Gift episode particularly,
my favorite
is
episode,
one there,
love it,
where if the surface breaks, you go down very deep very quickly, and he had an understanding that he did not control that. That once he lost that little crust that he was walking on, things got out of control very quickly, and that was not his way of surviving.
Yeah.
The Four Horsemen, they were the biggest, baddest, toughest guys around, and I think for him that became, you know, there's a glory to that for a while, but then it became very distasteful because he had this emotional connection to other humans that I think Kronos did not have.
Yeah.
But he also, you know, he loved his brothers, and he was not, he couldn't kill Kronos. So this became part of that same story of, I know this is there, but I'm just going to hide it.
Right.
And I'm just not going to think about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that little arc, that little story was about the past coming back and saying, hey, not dead.
There's just so much more to tell about Mythos, I can tell. Jim, you had so many great moments in the Highlander TV series. My personal favorite, and it tested the relationship between your character and Duncan and basically the Watchers in general, and that was the two-parter. I think it was 2 minutes to midnight.
Right, Judgment Day.
Yeah, with Jacob Galati getting some revenge.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you were ready to die for the cause, and you almost wanted to unite everyone to a certain degree. I wanted you to kind of touch on that, because when you were ready to die, I was buying it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was fantastic.
It was great to get those opportunities where you could really dig into something and not just say, oh, and, you know, do an exposition, which was a lot of what Joe did, you know.
Yeah.
But you had those opportunities to really be in the moment and be part of the thing. You know, Joe was a guy, this naive kid who had joined the Marine Corps, you know, and his whole life, you know, was kind of like Semper Fi, you know. And it was like, this is, you realize, okay, I made a mistake. I screwed up on my oath, and so I'm going to pay for it. And it's what I believe, what I said I'd do, and I'm, you know, I'm willing to take the consequences. And just, he was still, he remained, no matter what, sort of this naive kid from the, you know, Chicago suburbs that that wanted to be true to your shul.
Yeah. I want you guys to both answer this question. Why does the Joe and Mythos show work? What was it about you guys bringing to the characters and the chemistry that was almost more fun to watch than Duncan?
Almost.
Casey's listening, sorry.
I think a lot of it had to do with just our relationship off screen, you know. But when we got here when I realized, I mean, in that little period there where I realized that this kid, you know, he was kind of this kid that when I would go to Paris, he was one of the watchers and really smart and, you know, was interested in this, a lot of the same things I was interested in. And we'd go out drinking together. We were like drinking buddies, you know.
Right.
He was this young guy. I was bringing him along. And then I find out that he's this mythical character. And it was like, what the? Who do you think? But I never, you know, although all of a sudden I realized there was all this history involved, he was still this guy that I liked to go out drinking with, you know, that I really had this relationship with. And knowing that he was, you know, the oldest immortal in the world, and he had this incredible history. And then, once again, my interest in history, I can learn from this guy. I thought I was teaching him something, but this guy knows a lot more than me. So let's, yeah, you know, and also, like I say, just the relationship we had from the night we met, you know, we were able to bring that reality. We were not pretending to hang out together. We hang out together. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you feel when you watch those scenes. You feel the comfort, the ease we have with each other, the trust that we have with each other, that we could play scenes that on the page didn't have much going on. We would play them with depth and resonance because we'd muck about with them and make stuff happen that was not necessarily part of what they originally wrote. But you know, you bring that life. It's very rare that you work with actors that you just, I mean, the moment you meet, you just know this is going to be good. It's going to be fun.
Right before I let you guys go, I got a couple more questions for you. What would you say is your character from the Highlander TV series, the moment?
The moment.
The defining Mythos character for you.
I think for that character, the very first time you see him is the moment, because that's the strength of the writing. That the setup is all about, you know, it's the oldest immortal. It's going to be this wizened Gandalf-like character with a, you know, very long beard and very old and wise, and it's this kid
college
sitting down
drinking beer
and eating pizza. Yeah, that immediately, it's that ability to be jarring and completely obvious at the same time. The first thing you see is no, that's wrong, but then immediately you recognize, no, that's absolutely right. The same was true of the moment that you find that he was one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. It's like no. Oh yeah, no, of course. That's, you know, I think the very first time you see him, you get the possibility of everything that could happen.
Yeah. What was the defining Joe moment, you think, James?
I guess, you know, in the episode where I discover, what, you know, where I lose my legs and I discover that the Watchers discover me, and I just, you know, like, yeah, it's all of a sudden, here's this guy that was, you know, a high school football star and joined the Marines and really believed in this stuff and started realizing that, you know, like as Cord says to me, he says, these people need us like they need another hole in the head. And I was starting to, yeah, that's, you know, and every day was getting so many. And then to have this life-changing trauma passed upon you. And, you know, I wasn't even playing the part, but to wake up in the hospital and go through, be ready to commit suicide, and then have this fella come and explain this. What, are you kidding me? People that live forever? How, you know? But I wasn't even, I was not the actor in those scenes. But
he was a great actor. Did you have a chance to talk to him?
Oh, yeah,
about
sure.
The role?
Yeah. I know him. I know his dad.
No.
But coming out of that and then, you know, back all of a sudden my reality and all the things that had happened since then, and my spot in the Watchers, and the fact that I'd become sort of this confidant to all these people, and by all of a sudden breaking all the rules, which I was really not the kind of, I was a guy to love following the rules. But all of a sudden I was friends with these, all these immortals, and it was, but I think that moment of discovery and the fact that I really, the humanity, I mean, these guys were all immortal, et cetera. I knew that, but I also knew them as guys I wanted to see, have them over my bar and, sit over there and talk about this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
And just that realization that, I'm not one of them, but I'm as close to them as anybody can be.
Yeah. Question I want to ask you guys, when you just finished your last panel here, the question I asked you was, if Joe and Mythos were hanging around today, what would you guys do? You guys mentioned about taking a road trip together, maybe a train ride or something like that. What was it, Peter, about you, one of your favorite moments about Jim, whether it was behind the scenes, on the set, at a convention, what's one of your favorite moments of Jim?
Oh man, that's a very, very long list. In terms of the show, that the final episode in terms of filming was the Mythos and Joe on the road. That was just such fun to do.
Yeah. I must say that
the final episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chronologically. I mean,
indiscretion.
He had Adrian had already left. They had shot the end scene, all that stuff. But the last thing that was shot was our show.
Yeah.
And I guess that was part of knowing that this is there was something final about it, so we could really just stretch out and and make it be ourselves and stuff, and of course Dennis Perry, and he's got us we're driving down the wrong way on a one-way street, and we got with fake guns, replica guns out, and so it was really like, hey man, what's gonna happen here?
Jim, do you have a favorite Peter moment?
Well, once again, I guess those, the stuff we did on that show, and the arguments we have at the beginning, but the very end when he says, "I'm very old and I'm very wise." Sure you are.
Mythos had all the best lines. That's one of my favorites, because it's true and also not true, and also true. It's just they're the irony, the honesty. I mean, it's just beautiful, complex, simple.
But I did. I mean, I love that when I see it. It's like, okay, let's have another drink of whiskey.
Well, you guys have had a habit of upstaging the star of the show, Duncan MacLeod, and we love you guys for it. And thank you guys for coming down here for this convention.
Oh, you betcha. I wouldn't.
And it has been a absolute pleasure seeing you guys here and showing your love for the fans.
Great to be here and great to see everyone.
Yeah. Peter, thank you.
Ain't
Jim,
no audience,
thank you.
There ain't no show.
There you go.
Thanks, guys. All right, welcome back to Blood of Kings 131. Hope that you enjoyed that wonderful interview with Peter Wingfield and Jim Burns. How cool was that? They were so cool, and I just want to thank them again for just being awesome human beings, and you could tell that throughout that whole weekend, they really did enjoy this event. They loved meeting with the fans, and I just want to thank them again so much. I also want to thank, again, Renee Ree for putting on the event. She worked very, very hard. Sean, again, for being a wonderful MC, and all the wonderful, volunteers that were there. I just want to say it was also great seeing, several of our Blooded Kings family there. Andy Sloan, who of course hosts the Sea Coover tour, he was there as well. Jill Burdickus, she was there too. She came all the way from Japan. She brought her mother, which was great. I saw her and her mother at the last Highlander convention in LA. That was great. It was fun to hang out with them. It was just great to make new friends. It was great to also meet Kareem again, who works for Davis Panzer. It was great to talk with him and pick his brain about Highlander. In case you guys don't know this, actually, he posted some information on their official I think it was Instagram page for Highlander, of the cover art for the new Blu-ray set of the entire Highlander television series coming out. And our friend Grant Kempster over at Highlander Heart designed the wonderful cover art for the Blu-ray set. We don't have a release date, at least as of this recording, but hopefully it'll be out later this year. We get to get this entire series on Blu-ray. Anyway, thanks again for everyone for listening. Again, if you missed last week's episode or the last episode of Blood of Kings 130, where we interviewed David Abramowitz and Peter Wingfield sat in, please go check that out. And we hope that you enjoyed this interview with Jim Burns and Peter Wingfield. Anyway, thank you guys so much. I'm Kevin, and on behalf of my special guests, thanks everyone for listening, and join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings. That sensation you are feeling is a quickening. We are one. We are immortals. Goodbye, everyone.